Ian Pickus here. We're in the Congressional Corner today with David Hawkins, senior editor of the American Leader, and he formerly worked at the Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. David, welcome back. It's our first time talking since the new dawn in Washington. How you been?
I shouldn't say I'm already exhausted, but it's time for anybody who pays attention to this stuff to take a deep breath and pace yourself.
So along those lines, when we spoke in the run-up to the election and afterward, you know, you had expressed a lot of concerns about the way that President Trump challenges American institutions. So now that he's back in office, do you see that coming to fruition?
Oh, absolutely. From day one, I suppose the most obvious and simple one was the executive order trying to end birthright citizenship. Fascinatingly, it only took, 48 hours for a Reagan-appointed federal judge to say this was the most blatantly unconstitutional thing that he's ever had to rule on. But Trump will appeal that. He doesn't take no for an answer ever in the courts. So that's just, you know, sort of the first of many examples. He'll push against institutions all the time. I think, you know, his decision to send active duty military to the southern border is a stretch. I could go on and on.
What did you make of the inaugural address? I mean, typically, you know, presidents try to bring the country back together and say something nice about their predecessor, perhaps. That was obviously not the path he took.
Right. Clearly not. I wasn't at that inaugural last week. You know, very few people got in the room. I was at the one 8 years ago, the American Carnage speech, which still sort of rings in my ears. And this was sort of an American Carnage speech in a slightly different packaging.
Very,
not only do inaugural addresses usually begin with paying some homage to the peaceful transfer of power and giving some thanks to the predecessor, no matter which party that predecessor is from. But, you know, normally presidents try and perceive the country as glass is at least half full. And yes, you know, Trump, on the other hand, portrays the country as a wholehearted mess that only he can fix, to use another one of his most famous phrases from his original campaign. So it's a very different thing. And there were, did he say, I alone can fix it again? I don't remember. But there were sort of, you know, regal,
I think he implied
king-like
it.
Sentiments expressed, to go back to your first question. So it was a warning. I mean, on the one hand, we can console ourselves that if we've been paying attention, none of this should come as a surprise. It may come as a shock, but it shouldn't be a surprise. He is, in fact, that speech was exactly what you could have predicted he would have done.
Now, before we leave this era behind us, what did you think of President Biden's farewell address and then some of the last-minute things he did before passing the torch?
I actually thought the farewell address was important. I mean, it didn't get hardly any coverage, but his points about the tech industrial complex and the slide toward autocracy were very, very important points that history books might take note of, but I don't think the country really did. But nonetheless, I think we'll look back and say he had some prescient things to say in his final speech. The preemptive pardons of the folks connected to the Congressional January 6th Committee, I think, were politically acceptable, I guess is the word I'm thinking of. You know, did not raise political hackles. They divided the people on the January 6th committee, by the way. There were some members and staff on that committee who wanted preemptive pardons because they fear having to spend a bunch of their money on lawyers in the future. And there were others, you know, so the chairman of the committee, Benny Thompson, wanted a pardon. The most prominent Democrat on the committee, Jamie Raskin, did not want the pardon. But nonetheless, Biden had to make a sweeping decision to either pardon everybody to do who had to do with that committee or not. So I think those sort of survive politically. The quite literal last hour pardons of his five family members, I think, was a bad way to go out the door politically. You know, it's certainly a sad commentary that a president feels like he needs to preemptively pardon his own family members, who he thinks have, who we presumably believe he believes have done nothing wrong, and who the House has spent 2 years trying to figure out if they did something wrong and couldn't come up with the evidence. So a sad commentary that a president believes he has to do that, but nonetheless also a move that in the world of whataboutism gave the Trump side a very easy to say rebuttal to Trump's January 6th pardons.
You know, I've heard, and I hear what you're saying, and I've heard a lot of analysis and sort of similar comments, but I really just wonder if we're in a new era. You know, it seems to me Democrats were not rewarded in any way by voters for playing by the rules that we as an American democracy have accepted. You know, President Trump tried to overturn an election he lost with violence, paid virtually no price for that politically, got back into office, pardoned people who beat police officers and worse. And meantime, President Biden stood outside the White House and greeted the Trumps in for tea and rode with them and handed off power without complaint, really. So I guess what's the argument for Democrats playing by the rules?
You know, it's a persuasive point. It's a point that I hear whenever my children come home for supper, because they both say the exact same things. You know, what's the point is we're never going to break the cycle unless one side breaks the cycle. I guess that's the simplistic point. And then the rebuttal, of course, is, but unilateral disarmament doesn't work, and you got to fight fire with fire. I think. Well, you look at who went to the inaugural and who didn't. I mean, the former presidents all showed up, and the former vice presidents showed up, because they, I guess, in a bipartisan way, from Barack Obama to George W. Bush, believe that we should send a signal to the world that we're still a functioning democracy that believes in the peaceful transfer of power. Who did not show up? Well, gosh, Michelle Obama didn't show up. And notably, Mrs. Pence didn't show up for different reasons. Or maybe for the same reasons, that they believe that Trump has strayed so far afield that he shouldn't be rewarded by that kind of symbolic attendance. I'm stumped. I guess I am stumped. You make an excellent point. You just made it super crisply and well. I think at some point you have to be willing to stray from the normal procedures, but I think the bar for doing that has to be pretty darn high, and I guess we're getting there.
You know, Dr. Chartok, my predecessor as host of this show and the creator of the show, would say two wrongs don't make a right, which is obviously true. But I also imagine that President Biden was genuine in his fear that Trump will prosecute his family or try to with the takeover of the Justice Department. And then he gave a Fox News interview where he said Biden himself, who did not get a pardon from right. President Biden, should be investigated still. So it's not as if the war ended
fear.
After the election.
That's right. No, it is. It's a genuine fear on the part of Joe Biden. And it is, you know, as I say, in a normal world, there is no reason to have that fear, but we live with Donald Trump in an unprecedented world where the word unprecedented is so precedented now that it has almost lost its meaning. Yes, he has every reason to fear it, and Trump has not. I mean, here he is, Donald Trump, who has scored, the greatest political comeback in American history. Grievance should be the farthest thing from his mind, and yet, grievance is what is dominating, what dominated Inauguration Day, I would say, and what has dominated his first few days in office.
We've been speaking with our friend David Hawkings, senior editor of the American Leader. He formerly worked at The Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. David, it's always great having you on. And when we come back the next time, let's talk about some of the things that President Trump wants to do now that he's back.
Okie doke.